Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the podcast with K. I'm Christian Corley. With me is James Baldock and Simon Daines.
Hello.
Hello.
In the wrong order there. We're back for another Doctor Who chat, and this time we're talking about convention guests. Who are the best convention guests? Now, Simon has a bit of an advantage here, perhaps, or a different take on it, certainly, as he's run a few conventions, as we discussed in a previous podcast. But before we get onto that, let's just a sort of a general convention thing, and it's maybe an opportunity for me to repeat the story I've just told Simon. Because one of the best convention guests I've ever seen is Fraser Hines. Now, the reason why I think he was the best, or one of the best, is that I went to the Dimensions convention many years, probably about 12 or 13 years ago, in Stockton-on-Tees, which isn't too far from where I live. And there was... Guest A was supposed to turn up, and it might have been Colin Baker, I can't remember who it was, but that guest didn't turn up. So at the last minute, they got Fraser Hines as a last-minute replacement, who lives in the Yorkshire Dales somewhere, so it wasn't too much of a drive him to get there. And so he turned up at the last minute, and he was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, he's a very ebullient personality. He's charismatic. He's got all those good stories. He's got the advantage of being able to impersonate Patrick Charlton. And he was a great, I was going to say great turn there, as if I run a music hall. But he was great. So he's certainly one of my favourite convention guests.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I think he's always very good. He's very entertaining. Good raconteur. I think sometimes people, especially if they're not seasoned convention goers, and I used to be a seasoned convention goer, but I stopped going regularly to conventions in the 80s, really. I think people sometimes, if they're not seasoned convention goers, expect, you know, if Sophie Aldred's there, they expect to meet Ace. And they don't. They meet Sophie Aldred, who's very different.
It's acting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's rather like, you know, with the audio books. I was, you know, listening to Liz Sladen reading Planet of the Spiders, and she does Professor Jones, and I think, oh, God, she can do Welsh. You know, but one can sometimes forget they are actually actors, as you say, rather than the characters they play. So, you know, it depends on the personality of the actor.
I think there's a certain amount. I mean, if you have a 7-year-old walking through a supermarket and bumping into Peter Capaldi, it's quite reasonable for a 7-year-old to sort of think, oh, wow, it's the Doctor. Unfortunately, I think many fans of Doctor Who and other things like it possibly never stop being 7 years old in that respect.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I probably, I'm not great with meeting people, so I'm certainly not very good at meeting famous people. My wife's quite good at it. I loathe to bring out my Tom Baker story, so I won't, because it tends to get an outing at least once a year on the podcast.
I haven't heard it.
But basically, what happened was, I was at university in Leeds at the time for a few weeks. I've been to university several times and never managed to do it for very long. And a girlfriend at the time was with me. And so I went out to buy this, Who on Earth is Tom Baker?
Yeah.
And I queued for a long time. There was a man who was a sort of a cross between... Well, he was basically, I think he was dressed as the Master in Time Lord gear, but he looked more like Timothy Claypole. Anyway, so there's cosplaying going on. There's a very short sideman as well. And eventually made it to the front of the queue, and Tom sat there in his flasher mac, I suppose. As they were known in those, you know, a long brown raincoat, yeah. Macintosh. And I stepped forward to him with my newly purchased book and said, hello, my name's Christian. So he looked at me, and then he looked over my shoulder, and Claire, the girl I was with, I'd left her behind. Mm-hmm. She hadn't come forward with me, but then, no, I wasn't expecting it to. It was very much a me thing. You know, it was a long time ago. I was 20 and, or 21. And he looked at me and said, does the young lady have any part in this? I said, oh yes, this is, This is Claire with an E. Now, those of you out there who know anyone called Claire, or have a brain, will know that there's no way of spelling Claire without an E.
Claire.
Exactly. So he said, oh, well, signed something, and then off I trotted, completely bemused, embarrassed, and... Yeah, so, yeah, that's... Regular listeners have heard this story before, of course. This isn't a repeat. This is a new podcast. So that's what happened there, yeah. So, how did I even get onto this, anyway? I'm genuinely...
Meeting actors, yes.
Meeting actors, yeah. So, yeah, I can appreciate and, you know, that where people are coming from. As I say, Kerry's good at just talking to people. I think... Yeah, I don't think I've had a conversation with a famous person that wasn't completely uncomfortable or one-sided. Yeah. So, I am terrible at it. Yeah, but then again, I'm terrible at talking to people.
Yes.
Full stop, as you've no doubt noticed.
Yeah, I tend to sort of go too quickly when I'm speaking. I know when I was at the Fresh Green for Twice Upon a Time, I remember standing in the bar at the basement not long before we started and thinking, this is really nice and seasonal. And, you know what? I really like that. I really like it. Katie Manning walked in right now and I turn round and she's standing at the bottom of the steps. And
good Lord.
You couldn't have scripted it. I mean, I possibly wished for the wrong thing in a way. And I mean, but yeah, and I thought, oh my gosh, it's Katie Manning. And Katie Manning, actually, to give you a little bit of context, Joe Grant is one of my favourite companions, tied actually with Fraser. And Katie Manning is one of these people I've always wanted to meet. And of course, there she is. And given what you know about Twice Upon a Time, there is actually, there was a good reason for Katie to have been invited to this particular screening anyway, given things that happened in the story. And I thought, wow, great. I can finally sort of get to have a nice little chat with her. And I confess, I squealed like a fanboy. me, the professional journalist. Because said all the wrong things. I said, oh, wow, it's so nice to finally meet you. And she was lovely. I mean, from what I gather with talking to other people, is that she's lovely with everyone. There are some performers, some actors who get a little bit cross about these things, but she was so nice. And so I always try and reply to everybody who contacts me on Twitter. So do make sure that you talk to me on Twitter, and that'd be lovely. I had all these defences up and things I was going to say and sort of clever remarks about how great she was, but in the end, my boyish enthusiasm was what won out. And actually, that's probably not a bad thing, because at least I was being genuine about it, as opposed to sort of witty and acerbic and perhaps a little bit fake.
I couldn't do that at all. I don't know why. I think there is, I once had a conversation with Sylvester McCoy, actually, which I'm probably doing myself a disservice, and this was also at Dimensions. Might have been the same year, might have been the year after, I'm not quite sure. There was Daphne Ashbrook, Paul McGann, and Sylvester McCoy. And Daphne Ashbrook was utterly charging and made me feel like she was in love with me. Paul McGann was very blokey.
Maybe.
And Sylvester McCoy was very tired because he was in theatre in Scotland, and he'd come down for this on the train, and he seemed very tired and a bit bored and a bit, which is maybe something we're going to come on to, I don't know, but it seemed as if he was a bit sick of just signing things and not talking to people, and just, you know, there was a lot of people that were just like handing stuff over, grunting, which is utterly rude. I thanked him as best I could, not being the great talker to people. I thanked him as best I could and gave him a big smile, and he seemed to appreciate that. I think the gentleman that I was with, Brian Turnover and Anthony Dry were with me, actually. Former podcaster Turnover and well-regarded Doctor Who DVD insert artist Mr. Anthony Dry were also there. I think, in fact, there might have been an attempt to get Paul McGann to leave the convention early to go and watch Liverpool versus Arsenal at a pub nearby, which ultimately failed. But you know, you mentioned Fraser and Katie Manning, and there's a tweet went out by Mr. Gareth Cavanagh of this parish, who was linking a YouTube video in which various Doctor Who companions appear in adverts, TV adverts. So there's a Mary Tam in a Kitty Cat advert, for instance. There's Peter Davison advertising cookware. You may be familiar with this one.
Yes.
There is Katie Manning advertising an airline while she was Australian, if you remember that period of her life. And there's Fraser Hines advertising Ocean Finance. It's come to me. Walking out of a lift from the mid-90s, from around the time he left Emmerdale. I was asked not to come back to Emmerdale. And it's a nice little compilation. It was tweeted, and I made a comment about how great the little collection was. And Mr. Fraser Hines has replied, thanking the thanking Mr. Kavanagh for posting it. It's a nice little advert. I'm going to put it in the show notes actually, because it's a good little advert. It's entertaining little YouTube video. I love stuff like that on YouTube.
Is it the Doctor Who Outbreak of Death? Is that what it's called?
Yes, it is. It's that one.
Yeah, because I literally just found it on my YouTube thing. I'll watch it later on. But
yes, it's good. So, Simon.
Yeah.
From the perspective of a convention runner.
Yeah.
What makes a good convention guest?
They have to have been in Doctor Who.
Fair enough.
What makes a good convention guest? Actually, I haven't had a bad convention guest, which is not me being totally sycophantic, but. I mean, obviously, some stick out more in the memory than others.
You must be very good at picking them, then.
What?
You must be very good at choosing them.
Yes, very good. Very good indeed. Very good indeed. You do sometimes get requests from people saying, please, at the next convention, can you have Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant and Matt Smith?
Oh.
and you say, well, yeah, you know, it has occurred to me. But it's not always that easy. I mean, yes. So if I can answer that question in my own way, coming up on Saturday the 7th of April, listeners, is Bedford Who Charity Con 4, which is being held in Bedford, easily accessible from London and indeed from the north of England and Scotland via the M1 and the A1. If you'd like more details of Bedford Who Charity Con 4, that's on Saturday the 7th of April 2018, please go to online bedfordwhocharitycon.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply.
That's very good. Do you rehearse that?
No.
It's very good. Very good.
Thank you very much.
You now have to do a whole bunch of, seeing as this is audio, you now have to do a whole bunch of small print.
Ready. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Children under 12 must be accompanied by an adult. Oh, God, what makes a good convention guest? They've all been good. I mean, the ones that I suppose stand out are the ones who are particularly keen to actually, you know, go the second mile and go out and mingle with the fans.
Right.
People like Sophie Aldred are very, very generous with things like that. You know, they don't go off to the green room and put their feet up. Although, of course, they're perfectly entitled to do that. But, you know, they'll go and join the coffee queue and chat to people and have unsolicited photographs taken and so on. And that really gives people a good buzz. And I tend to find, because I host them as well, when we did the first convention, I was desperately looking around for somebody to host it. And then by default, I had to do it myself. And I tend to just ask the first couple of questions and then hand it over to the audience so that they can ask the questions that they want to, rather than me hogging it. And I've been to some conventions where, you know, the host hasn't been terribly, whoever's running the panel hasn't been terribly good and has asked lots of silly and obscure questions, which guests, and then, you know, if you're lucky, you might get 1 minute where somebody else from the audience gets a chance to answer the question. I think the point was made earlier about how you sort of suppress your inner fanboy, and obviously, I have an inner fanboy, and I do sit on him when I'm at conventions, because part of me is going, oh, my God, I'm talking to Sophie Aldred! obviously, in that accent. But it's partly sort of going into role, if you like. And I sort of tell myself I am talking to a senior colleague and then adopt that sort of persona. So I'm respectful without being too calling. And also, I think, you know, not pretending that they're my best buddies, because I find that rather irritating, you know. If you've met somebody a couple of times, you can't claim that they're your best pals with them. So anyway, someone like Sophie Aldred is very, very good. She's a very, very nice person, quite apart from the fact that she was in Doctor Who, you know. She played Ace. And she's rather like if your parents, you know, one of the mums on the school gate, so you just chat with while you're waiting to pick the children up, and just very approachable, very ordinary.
Yes.
And John Leeson's like that as well, you know, very ordinary guy, absolutely charming, willing to go the second mile for, willing to go the second mile for the guests. Annika Wills is very good too. You know, and someone else who's very charming. And I think she's a member of the, I can't remember the chap's name, but the Bhagwan's community. So she's in a Hindu sort of community. And I think she's still a member of that. And I think that sort of concern for other people, that ideology inculcates in people, comes out very strongly in the way she talks to people, you know. And I think that she's one of these people who is a very rare gift, this, but, you know, she manages to convey to anyone she meets that you're the most important person in the world to her, and she's absolutely delighted to see you. She wasn't like that with me. No, she was like that with me, but she's like that to everybody. So it's a very nice experience for people who meet her. I think some of the guests that stand out, I mean, Mike Tucker's excellent. He's done a lot of stuff for us. Very, very good speaker, very nice man as well, very approachable. And doesn't have a big hat saying, I used to work for the BBC, you know, and I'm very important. He's just a very interesting guy.
Where do you get a hat like that?
I think you can get them online.
Right. I've never seen one.
No.
Redbubble, maybe?
Yeah, it could be. Robert Maxwell used to have a cup for his coffee that said, a very important person on it. But the thing is, he didn't take it ironically. I'll tell you who was fun, was Elsa Burke, who was the choreographer.
All right, yes.
She is the choreographer, and at our first event, she actually did a monster movement workshop. So we got all the audience, except for the very shy ones, up, and they were all marching like Cybermen or like scarecrows. And she got us all, you know, to stand with our legs slightly apart and stick our chests out.
And roar.
No, not quite, but also bunch our fists and hold our arms slightly akimbo. And it did occur to me that this is also the pose for F.R. Gumby from Monty Python.
Cyberman flower arranging.
Yes. So, we've got coming up to Bedford Who Charity Con 4. That's on Saturday, the 7th of April, 2018. BedfordWhoCharityCon.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply. We've got Sophie and John Leeson and the guests that we haven't had before. We've got Colin Baker, who's always good. Louise Jameson's coming, who I met very briefly in the queue for the ladies. I wasn't in the queue for the ladies.
I'm glad you cleared that up, because I was starting to panic for her.
And she said, there's a big queue here. And I said, don't worry, I'll sort it out. So, anyway, how I sorted out the queue for the ladies is another thing. And who else have we got? Oh, Angela Douglas is coming. So
right.
That should be a laugh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what did she do?
She was Doris Lethbridge-Stewart, one of the many members of the Lethbridge-Stewart family.
Yes.
We had Jeffrey Beavers last year. He was very good.
Does
he? Yeah. Yeah, quite quiet, you know, self-contained. But we have a session at the end which is shamelessly nicked from Doctor Who magazine, when Doctor Who magazine was in its heyday. Being careful what I say here. The out of the TARDIS thing where you...
Oh, right, yes. TARDIS
questions and end up with that. And actually, Jeffrey gave some of the funniest answers, you know. Had the audience in stitches, he did. Had the audience in stitches. And we also had Maureen O'Brien, who's very, very rare.
Yeah, she doesn't do much, does she?
Attention. No.
Isn't she an artist now?
Pardon?
Is she an artist now?
No, she lives
a novelist.
So she's not in the country much. She came to us because she was doing an audio book, and she stayed over a few days so that she could do our convention. But she also did it because it was a charity event.
Right.
And she was very nice afterwards. She said, she said, you know, I'm a conventionophobe, which I thought was a good word.
Mm.
But she said, enjoyed your convention very, very much, you know, and didn't expect to. She can be quite sort of serious when she's on stage. I'm not, you know, which is absolutely fine. But, you know, she lightened up when she was on stage with us, and there was a lot of laughing and joshing with Peter Purvis and so on.
Mm.
And she also did a sketch with Peter for us, of Vicky and Stephen meeting at a Doctor Who Companions reunion when they were older people. They met at a Doctor Who Companions reunion in Bognor Regis and were looking back on their lives and so on. And it was very funny. Very, very funny.
It's a while since she retired now, isn't it? I remember she was in one of the, it's difficult to narrow it down. She was in a Cracker serial, wasn't she?
Yes.
With Jim Carter.
She did a stint in Casualty as well.
Oh, right.
Well, it was either Casualty or Holby City. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, she's in her 70s now, so, doesn't live in the country anymore. But she was also a novelist for quite a long
That's
time.
That's right, yes, yes.
A very, very good one as well. I read one of them out of courtesy because she was coming along, and then because I also like detective fiction, is one of my other hobbies, and you know, she's up there with the best detective fiction writers, you know.
Okay.
Oh, and Katie Manning, I'm going to best James on this because Katie Manning offered to sit on my lap.
Right.
So nerd to you, James. Bet she didn't offer to sit on your lap. But I did say no.
Did she offer to buy you a drink, James?
Sorry?
Did she offer to buy you a drink?
Well, she would have done if it hadn't been a free bar.
Right, okay. I'll tell you what. I've been to lots of different types of conventions, which makes it sound a lot more than it is. I've been to two different types of conventions. No, three, probably. I've been to ones where there's only one guest. I should mention that I have managed to have a conversation with Terence Dix in a very noisy place. So I think that's a plus for me. Because his hearing isn't so great these days. I've been to big convention types like the Dimensions. I've been there a couple of times. And I've been to smaller conventions with multiple guests. Some of the ones that our fellow podcaster Gareth Gavanna ran a few years ago in Manchester. And I must admit, I prefer the smaller approach to conventions, but I don't want to be negative about the gentleman concerned, but I did see a very bad convention interview. He was a bad guest. I think the interview was very bad. It was Aidan Salmon, the Doctor Who magazine illustrator, was interviewing Chris Achilleos, and there was a microphone problem Mr. Achilleos didn't want to use one. Mm-hmm. So while he gave very good answers, no one could hear him unless they were sat in the front row.
Yeah.
Which was a bit terrible. But other than that, he was a good guest, but it did make for an uncomfortable afternoon.
Yes.
Did he not want to use a microphone?
I have no idea. I think maybe he had some sort of phobia against I genuinely don't know why he didn't want to, but he refused a microphone.
It's funny, actually, because I went to see I went to a festival many years ago, and Bill Drummond, formerly of the KLF, was in attendance talking about one of his many side projects. this one was about a book, a photo that he bought and then sort of cut into thousands of pieces for various reasons I won't bore you with. It's a long, long story. And he took about an hour and a half telling it. But we were in this, I don't know if you know Cheltenham Racecourse at all, but it has a rather nice indoor stage area, which which they'd only just built and which was being used for various things. And Bill was in there doing this lecture and refused to use a microphone. So, which was fine, but people are sitting at the front, but at the back, we were sort of straining to hear for about, you know, half an hour. When, for reasons unknown, halfway through, he suddenly decided to turn on the microphone and deliver the rest of it amplified, which was thoroughly bizarre.
Maybe he doesn't like the sound of his own voice.
Perhaps he doesn't. I mean, I don't like the sound of my voice. I mean, I always sound dreadful when I hit this. I mean, I suppose everybody does that.
Few people do, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe it was that. But, yeah, halfway through, he suddenly said, oh, I might as well turn the microphone on now. You've done that at the beginning! But, yes. Mm. So, you said that you like smaller ones with multiple guests.
Yes.
You got a reason for that?
What I don't like, and we have talked about this on the podcast with the K previously, with the other guys, but it's the commercialization of the whole thing. You know, there's very commercial events where you have to pay to go into a room to see someone, or you have to pay to get a signed photograph, and there's the queuing, and it's like an industrialization of the experience. But I don't think it should be like that. It should be a community experience, and you lose that when you're herding people around to buy stuff.
Funnily enough, one of the nicest conventions I went to recently, I was just there because they wanted a Dalek, and I happened to have one. But the Leighton Buzzard, it was in Leighton Buzzard in a middle school, and it was last summer. It was last spring, and it wasn't just Doctor Who, it was lots and lots of science fiction, but it was just very laid back and easygoing, and it was very good. You know, the guests were chatting to people, and it didn't pretend to be, you know, this is a great commercial experience and we're going to fleece you for every penny you've got. Not that any of them do that.
No.
But, you know, it was sort of 20 quid to get in, and then you wandered around and there was me sweating away inside a Dalek, which is what they really came to see. but actually what I thought was very amusing, or I found it very amusing, but probably nobody else did, was if you're inside a Dalek, the best thing to do is to be totally still until people start touching it. And stick your satisfaction.
Oh, you're evil.
Wonderful.
Yes. I also kept prodding this stormtrooper. Oh no! It was a bloke dressed up as Darth Vader as well. So I was sort of prodding him with my sucker stick, you know, saying, "Yeah, you know, I'm going to kick sand in your face, son."
You talk about pretensions, though. I there is a convention that I know of, not a million miles from here, and I will not mention names or locations. But suffice it to say that the person running it refers to himself in the third person and calls himself the architect.
Ah. Are there other names for this person?
I don't know.
Not repeatable.
Whenever he's planning his convention and referring to the guests, he talks about the architect is planning this.
Oh.
Which is, I wouldn't mind if he actually had the names, but he really doesn't.
Does he have a console room?
Probably, yes. Yeah.
So, I don't want to limit you, Simon, but I mean, outside of your conventions, what's the best convention experience you've had?
The 7th of April, 2018.
Away from there, what's your best convention experience?
Doctor Who magazine did two. They did a 30th anniversary one.
Right.
Now, I think that was called... No, it was 35-year anniversary, would you believe? It was called 35 Up. And they did one a couple of years before that, which was called A Perfect Day. And I mean, I didn't nick stuff wholesale from them, but I tried to get some bits. So I took some ideas from it, not least the fact that it was light-hearted and it was laid back, you know, and it wasn't treating Doctor Who as though it was, you know, as though it was a piece of holy writ or something, and mustn't be and must be taken totally seriously.
Which they do tend to do now, nowadays.
Yeah.
Well, they have done recently, anyway.
Gary Gillett was the host and was very good because he was very funny. And they had a mixture of stuff, as you know, they did have signings, but they also had, you know, they had the panel interviews, but they had a lot of humour in it as well. Quite a few bits of comedy. We were talking in the last podcast about Sharda and filling in the missing, you know, filling in the missing footage. And they had a thing of Galaxy 4 where they recreated the first 5 minutes using sock puppets. that was very funny. The sock puppet of Hartnell actually got his body language as well, which is very good. So you had the soundtrack for Galaxy 4 and sock puppets, and the Peter Purvis sock puppet was wearing a Blue Peter badge, and it was in black and white, so it was very good.
Excellent. Oh, if only someone had filmed it.
I think they probably had, actually. Well, I mean, it was done as a film, so it was projected. You know, live sock.
It wasn't a live
sock puppet show.
That's a shame.
It's probably around somewhere. I don't know. Maybe Doctor Who magazine still have them. I agree with you that the smaller ones tend to be better. I've been to a couple where this was in the 90s. It really stopped me going, actually, because there was a chap who oh dear, he clearly had Asperger's, and in the middle of one of the panels got to question time, and his question was, why is it that so and so who's advertised hasn't turned up? You know, which was clearly important to him, and yes, it was inappropriate, but he wouldn't have known it was inappropriate. And it was a big hall full of people, and they all started laughing at him, except for the panelist, of course, who took him seriously and appreciated that this was something that was important to him. And I thought, well, you know, this actually is not pleasant, and I don't like this. And the poor chap was very, very upset, you know. And I thought, well, you know, sod this for a game of soldiers. I'm not going to one of these again. Just didn't know how to behave.
I've seen something like that.
You know, you clearly get a cross section of society, and you get some people with disabilities, and you know, you have to know how to respond to people if they behave in a way which might not normally be considered appropriate. You know, and it's certainly, the audience there seemed to regard him as part of the entertainment, and you know, it left a very nasty taste in the mouth. So there you are, the serious bit, the serious.
I've seen that behaviour echoed online certainly recently.
Yeah,
I frequent a number of social media groups, and there are people in there with obvious learning difficulties.
Yeah.
I have to actively monitor the conversations and nip in quickly if anybody starts being rude to them. Because it is often taken as read that if you are in this group, you are obviously intelligent and sensible and will ask sensible questions, and if you ask silly questions, you will be ripped apart.
Yeah.
And sometimes there is a place for ripping people apart if they are being obnoxious, but there is a place for not doing it if that person is clearly suffering. And it is usually easy to tell that the person is suffering, even online. Yeah. And so you have to be very, very quick off the mark and say, look, leave it, because there are reasons why this person is asking this question. It is important to them. Do not mess with it. So I know exactly where you're coming from with that. I mean, I've never seen it live, which must have been an excruciating experience from that point of view. But yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we don't get that sort of thing at Bedford 2 Charity Con 4 on Saturday the 7th of April 2018.
That is reassuring to know. Now, I'd forgotten about this for some reason. But a few years ago, the BBC held a big convention. It was probably in 2013, I'm guessing. It may have been in 2012, actually. It was. I'm pretty sure it was 2012. They had a big convention in Wales, in Cardiff, which I was invited to. And in a rare move for BBC Worldwide, they actually followed through and sent me the tickets. Or told me I could go and my name was on the list or whatever. Which several times subsequently, they told me I could go to something and I couldn't. It turned out. But anyway, that's another story. And so I was invited there for free. It was very nice to go there. I actually had a terrible hangover. My sister lives in London, so I stayed at my sister's. And it also happens that my best man lives in London, not too far from my sister. So we went out the night before. And then I got the train quite early from one of those stations in London, that there London, to Bristol, and then changed to go to Cardiff. And at Bristol Temple Meads, I felt absolutely dreadful. Really, really, one of the worst hangovers I've had. But fortunately, they had one of those Cornish pasty company stands in the station. So I bought a bacon bun and recovered almost immediately. and then there was a long walk from the station in Cardiff to the venue, which was over near the... it was in that big place that they have in Cardiff, wasn't it? Where they sometimes film Dot 2 bits and bobs. And it was an interesting day, but it was possibly the epitome of the commercialised convention, which was a shame, really.
I think...
But I don't think there's any way they could have done it other than that.
I think sometimes one of the problems that convention organisers experience, and I talk to other convention organisers because we swap ideas and things like that. And actually, one of the nice things is, on the whole, there isn't rivalry between us. We all work together and help each other out. But one of the features is there can be a naivety on the part of the agents. For actors and so on, especially actors, that because their clients can get big fees from the GIGA conventions, that everybody's able to pay that sort of money. And I did have an inquiry recently where, I mean, this is chicken feed by some fee standard, but I'd said, is X person available, would X person like to come to this, like to come to our convention? That's Bedford too. Anyway, and they said, okay, well, so what's the fee you're offering? And I said, it's this. And then they said, would you be willing to go to £2,000? And I said, I politely declined. What I wanted to say is, no, I bloody well wouldn't, because it's £2,000 for X, and X is not worth £2,000, but of course I wouldn't have said that. But you know, there can be a huge naivety about what you're paying, and some people make at conventions, some people make five figure sums, you know, for appearances, and sometimes even I have heard mention of six figure sums for some people, which clearly is totally out of the question for the smaller convention organisers. But you know, there can be a naivety on the part of actors' agents about these things. Although, of course, it has to be said that most of them are very good, and most of them are helpful.
Yeah.
But there you are. The problem with the big conventions is it's become very, the whole convention scene has got very commercial, and the bigger conventions can price the smaller ones out of the market.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. So, James, do you have a famous... We'll finish with you. Do you have a favourite convention?
Well, since you asked for a tale of intrigue and scandal, no, to be honest, no. But I have one story to tell. I should let you know that my convention experience is incredibly limited in that I've only ever been to one. Simply because it's just not, it's just never something that's particularly interested me. I think when you get to my age, you start to get to the point where you kind of don't want to hang around with people too much. Or at least you want to be more selective about the people to whom you speak. It's fine with people you like, but meeting strangers, no. So I've stayed away from the conventions, and also having a family doesn't sort of help things. I have children with ASD, and that does tend to sort of limit the amount of time you can spend in big crowded spaces with lots of people. But a couple of years back, I was invited to help out at the inaugural and thus far sadly only Didcot Comic Con, which was about as low key as it gets in a way. There were a number of guests on the bill. I was asked to interview three of them. One was a local author. One was an actor whose great claim to fame was being sat on by Mr. Blobby in the Howie Hill. the other was John Levine. It was a baptism of fire in that respect. You hear all sorts of stories about John, some of which are probably true, some of which are almost certainly exaggerated. And to be absolutely frank, I was a little bit scared because there's me going into this whole new system, whole new setup. I've never done it before, and I'm expected to interview you. So I thought, what do I do about this? And on the advice of a couple of other people, I got in touch with Toby Hadoke. Or is that how you pronounce it? Is it Hadoke or is it Hadoke?
Hadoke. I think it's Hadoke.
So Toby Hadoke. So I sent him a message and said, look, what do I do? And he said, look, just treat him like he's the most important person in the room and be nice to him and you'll be fine. He's a lovely bloke.
Yeah.
So we got there on the morning and I was sort of, you mentioned earlier, Simon, about sort of doing treating them like a senior colleague.
Yes.
And I think that's the vibe I was going for as well, and I turned out to be the right call. And they picked him up from the station, and he flounces in wearing this sort of bright floral shirt and free jacket, middle of summer, this is. And he comes straight over to me, having been introduced, and said, right, James, okay, so tell me, you know Doctor Who? I said, yes. He said, right, well, here's what we'll start. We'll start by you asking me what my favourite story was, okay? And then I will say the demons. I said, okay, right now. And then you can ask me why. I said, well, okay. And I'll say, well, because it had everything. It had all sorts of devilry, and they had the Master, and it had UNIT, and it had male witches. Now, male witches, right? Male witches, what are they called? I said, warlocks. He said, that's right. He said, and warlocks, what does it sound like? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it sounds like bollocks, doesn't it? And I said, I suppose it does. Yeah, he said, so I'll say that. And then you can say, warlocks. And then I'll say, no, they really did. And it'll be funny. we got to the interview, and that's how we started it. And, of course, not a single person in the room laughed at this joke that he'd taken great pains to set up. Suffice it to say, it was brilliant. Because I don't know if you've had, I mean, you've presumably seen, either of you seen John at conventions before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Essentially
what happens is you don't interview him. There was footage of me on YouTube trying to interview John Levine, and essentially it's me asking the questions that I painstakingly written down and John telling jokes for about 15-20 minutes, occasionally crying a bit when he talks about her, and with me sort of trying to get a word in edgeways and steer the conversation back to something that's sort of vaguely resembling Doctor Who rather than the mother-in-law jokes that he's been writing down.
This is on YouTube.
Yeah, if you Google Didcot Comic Con, it's actually there.
No need, it'll be in the show
it's
notes.
Great. He was lovely. From what I've heard, John Levine likes it a lot when he is top of the bill, and he was top of the bill in this case, which was why it was an honour to be the person who interviews the person who's top of the bill, particularly for a first convention. He was great. He was so nice all day. He sat there all day at his table, talking to people, chatting with fans, chatting with the other guests, smile on his face. I know that there are sort of a lot of stories about whether he is as genuine as he seems to be on stage. But really, I could see no difference between the person he was behind the scenes, the person he was at the desk, and the person he became when he came up to be interviewed. So for a first experience, it was a pretty good one, it must be said. And that's my John Levine story, never been told before. So
excellent. It's great to have a Doctor Who celeb story, isn't it? What's yours, dear listener? What's your favourite convention experience, and who's your favourite convention guest? Let us know. Tell us on Twitter. Tell us on Facebook. And just start the conversation, and we'll probably dip in and continue it. That's how conversations work, isn't it? So I'm told. I think that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with the case. So, by all means, yes, get in touch with us and let us know. We'll be back in the future. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.